And hello again, I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing, and I'm speaking with Susan Purdon, who is the country director for Southern Sudan for the International Rescue Committee. She joins us from Juba. Thank you for joining us here today in Los Angeles, Susan Purdon.
Hello, and thank you for calling.
And tell me, at this point, do you have any information you can share with us about the referendum and the extent to which it has led to a new country in Africa?
Well, the referendum voting started today. It's 10 o'clock at night in Sudan now. The voting started at 8 o'clock this morning, but it continues every day this week. So the outcome that we can tell you about is that it was a tremendous event. Huge crowds turned out. It was very orderly, very celebratory for people to have the opportunity to vote. And there were comments like, oh, the line is 5 hours long, and they said, we've waited years, we can wait 5 hours.
So am I correct in suggesting that it is likely to result in the formation of a new country, splitting Africa's largest country, Sudan, along north-south lines and Muslim-Christian lines?
It's definitely likely to be the decision of the voters to choose separation, and the division is between the north and the south of the country. While some folks characterize the struggle as Christian versus Muslim, there are actually Christians in the north and Muslims in the south. You know, I wake up in the south to the sound of the call to prayer from the minaret. So it's not strictly Christian and Muslim division. It's a southern-northern division.
So would this mean that there would therefore be a refugee problem with Christians in the north migrating to the south if the north proves inhospitable, and vice versa with Muslims migrating to the north?
There's been a lot of movement of people from the south, returning from them, having been in safety in the north during the conflict and coming back to the south to their homeland with the anticipation of the separation. Again, it's not about as much about Christian and Muslim as it is about traditional ethnic groups that lived in the southern area versus the more Arab groups that lived in the north. Refugees are a term that we use for people who have crossed an international border, so these are considered returnees having been displaced internal in Sudan during the time of the conflict.
Well, as you know, Susan Purdon, again, the country director for Southern Sudan, who's joining us for the International Rescue Committee, who's joining us from Juba, the leader of Sudan, President Omar al-Bashir, is also been indicted by the International Criminal Court as a war criminal. For the longest time, there has been civil war between the north and the south, leading to the State Department to describe the situation as a genocide. This agony has been going on for a number of years. I take it that the whole point of this is an attempt to end the agony, but it seems to be happening at the expense of Bashir, in the sense that he's losing half his country.
It's definitely a sense of loss for the government in the north to have the south separate. And just as there have been religious issues and ethnic issues, there are economic issues. There is oil reserve in the southern part of Sudan, and part of the difficulty between the two sides is sharing that wealth. The indictment of Bashir was concerning crime of genocide in Darfur, which is western Sudan, actually part of the area that will still be in the north. But yes, there have been conflicts in Sudan for decades.
So let's talk then, if we can, Susan Purdon, about the subtext of oil, which I think is a big factor here. And in splitting the country along north-south lines, and if the new deposits are in the south, that would make the south give the new southern government a means to survive and prosper, perhaps. I take it, though, that the biggest player in these oil discoveries and the ones most likely to develop these new fields are the Chinese.
This is true. The oil has been known for some time, but the country of Sudan has been under economic sanctions imposed by Western governments, and so Western companies haven't had as much opportunity to explore or exploit the oil here, and the government of Khartoum has made a deal with the government of China. The reserves are in the area that's controlled by the southern part of the government of southern Sudan, but the pipeline goes north to Port Said on the near the Suez Canal area of Sudan. So while the oil reserves are in the south, the actual opportunity to profit from them depends on that pipeline. So there really is a reason for both sides to cooperate in order to use the oil resource for economic use for the country.
Well, given that 80% of Sudan's oil reserves are in the south, and as you mentioned, Susan Purdon, the pipeline heads north, I understand, though, that the Chinese are exploring the possibility of building a pipeline from southern Sudan across Somalia through Puntland to Berbera, the port on the Arabian Sea or another port on the Indian Ocean for direct shipment to China.
Yes, I've heard that too. I've also heard that they were talking about a pipeline through Kenya to Mombasa. The challenge seems to be that it would take a number of years to build another pipeline, and the estimate is that the reserves will only continue to produce in sufficient quantities to be profitable for the next 15 years. So there's a trade-off if the decision is to wait for a pipeline to the that's controlled by the south.
Again, I'm speaking with Susan Purdon, who is the country director for Southern Sudan for the International Rescue Committee, and she joins us from Juba. So give me a sense then of what is going on in the street and what is the kind of sense of celebration, but I imagine there's also some sense of foreboding amongst some people in terms of humanitarian issues that we were talking about earlier in terms of not so much refugees because they are displaced persons within their own country like we've witnessed in Iraq.
Very much. And in fact, there's an underlying humanitarian concern for the people of southern Sudan who have had very low levels of development because of decades of conflict ravaging the countryside. So we have a population that is very impoverished, very young. 72% of the population is under the age of 30, but also 70% survive on a dollar a day, which isn't a lot of money in anybody's calculation. So at that level of devastation caused by decades of war and the underlying poverty of a rural population, leads to poor health indicators, poor education indicators, and essentially a very low level of human development in general. So there's a lot of anticipation with this new independence that everybody expects will be the result of the referendum, leading to better things, more schools, more clinics, better health, better livelihoods for people. And the fact is the government is going to be very busy trying to learn how to be a new government and all the responsibilities that entails, border security, a new currency, what are they going to call the new country. And those basic services are going to take many years to develop. The international actors, like the International Rescue Committee, and the UN agencies are here to support the government and to help provide those basic services. So on top of the impoverished population that's been living here for forever, those folks who were displaced to the north are coming home. And since November, well, let me back up. The peace agreement was signed in January of 2005, and hundreds of thousands of people have returned over the 5 years since then. But since November of this year, in anticipation of the referendum, another 143,000 came back. And some of them haven't been able to go out into live into communities yet. And they're what we call stuck in transit centers. So they have no shelter, no basic services. And so right now, we're ramping up our health care in order to meet the needs of the folks stuck in transit centers.
But again, I'm speaking with Susan Purden, who is the country director for Southern Sudan for the International Rescue Committee, and she joins us from Juba in Southern Sudan. And we're talking about the referendum that started today and that will continue for the rest of the week, that likely to split Africa's largest country in two along north-south and Christian-Muslim lines. And you were saying earlier that even though 80% of Sudan's oil is in the south, and this may prove to make this government viable economically, it is also dependent upon the pipeline that heads north through the country from which they're splitting. Given the history of civil war, do you think that Bashir is simply going to take this lying down? Is the die cast here?
That's a really hard question to answer. It's hard to predict the future. What we have seen in the language from the government of the North and the government of the South is a very calm language saying they will, both sides will respect the outcome of the vote, that they're very careful to say that southerners in the north will still be safe, northerners in the south will still be safe. One of the things that needs to be determined is citizenship. So will there be some sort of mechanism by which people are freely allowed to cross the border, or will there be a very defined and restricted access? But the political rhetoric is quite positive about accepting the results. I think that there has been a lot of influence and conversation across governments. When the peace agreement was signed in 2005, there were other countries that were sort of parties to that agreement, and they have been supporting it for the duration of the agreement leading up to the referendum and the referendum process. So there have been meetings in Addis Ababa to resolve some of the unresolved subjects. There are still unresolved things, but there is a lot of global politics going on to make it worthwhile for both sides to stay peaceful in the outcome of the referendum.
So just in closing, it would seem, Susan Purden, that the Chinese are playing a key role. If they have been supporting Bashir's government against the wishes of the U.S. and the Europeans, at the same time, the oil is in the south, which the Chinese want to develop. So it looks like the Chinese are sitting in the catbird seat here.
Well, the Chinese do have a measure of influence, but there are others who still have a lot of influence, even in the West. President Obama has offered to reduce the sanctions against Sudan for a continued good relationship following the referendum, or a continued holding of the peace. Senator Kerry is here now for the referendum. There are special representatives from the U.S. government to both sides of Sudan. Jimmy Carter is here for the referendum. There's a lot of global attention being paid, and a lot of that is being directed at maintaining peace. The last thing anybody wants is for this vote to result in a resumption of contact.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today in Los Angeles, Susan Purdon from Southern Sudan. Thank you so much.
Thank you, too.
Bye-bye. Hello again, I'm Ian Masters. I've been speaking with Susan Purdon, who is the country director for Southern Sudan for the International Rescue Committee. She joined us from Juba in Southern Sudan. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking with Felix Salmon about how to deal with the plutocrats.